shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt. I thought we'd do something slightly different today. Rather than just talk about the week's political events, I want to talk about the whole arena of freedom of speech. I want to talk about the old media, the new media. Ask the question of, does the old media still have a massive influence in our country? What are the state broadcaster, the BBC and things like Sky News, how much power do they have? Are they biased? Do certain organisations and events get soft treatment and others much harder? And to discuss all this, I'm going to talk to the military historian, Mr. Mike Yardley, who joins us now.
Shooting from the lip.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, John.
OK, let's get straight into this. As I say, kind of wide-ranging discussion. I don't know where it's quite going to go. But let's start off by talking about the latest things that are happening. Obviously, Brexit and obviously Extinction Rebellion and the way they brought London to a standstill over the last week or so. Do you think they get a soft ride, both in the old and the new media? What do you reckon?
Well, I think it's amazing. I mean, I was listening to a BBC Radio 4 programme today, and they were talking to people who were anti-abortionist protesters in the US. And, you know, these were people who were Christian and who had extreme views, but they'd taken their children to the protest, and they were really giving them a hard time for taking kids to this protest. And, of course, the thing that immediately came to mind is with Extinction Rebellion, lots of children are dragged into that to follow the parents' political ideas. I don't approve of taking children to any sort of political protest. But what was interesting was the different way it was handled in the case of the anti-abortion protesters and in the case of Extinction Rebellion. Now, going further than that, the idea that you might have to beg an Extinction Rebellion anarchist to let you through their illegal roadblock in London for your own medical attention or to see a dying friend absolutely appalls me. We're losing the plot. Someone has to bring order back to this chaos, or it's all going to end very, very badly.
What do you put that down to?
Well, I think that there is a bias within the media. I think the whole climate change issue, the BBC is partial about. It assumes it's happening. And not only does it assume it's happening, it is acting as the agent for the climate change activists. I mean, look at the sort of coverage that grisly young Greta got. I mean, that ridiculous speech she gave to the UN conference, which was really quite scary. It looked as if she was, you know, auditioning for The Exorcist to me. Meantime, there are a lot of people who share our dissenting points of view. I mean, for example, recently I put up on Twitter, I really can't watch BBC TV anymore. It's manipulative. The news is partial. Drama's so PC, it's not only unwatchable. Sometimes I feel actually offended by it. Where did my country go? Its values, its tradition, and its stalwart, tolerant, and humorous people, we've been trashed by PC. And over 5,000 people have liked that. So there are a lot of other people like us thinking this stuff. But our points of view do not get across on the mainstream news. We see that the news is partial. It seems to be favorable, generally speaking, towards anything to do with climate change. It doesn't seem very favorable to Brexit. It doesn't seem very favorable to Boris. I mean, again, let's give an example. Boris is accused that, you know, 20-odd years ago, he may have squeezed somebody's thigh. And it is everywhere. It's a minor story, in my opinion, but it seems to be everywhere. And yet, the leadership of the Labour Party have consorted with Irish Republican terrorists and other terrorists, and that is okay. You know, the media do not chase that up. Well, to me, that seems a far, far more serious issue. And why aren't they doing that? Why is there this apparent double standard? I listen to Radio 4 a lot, and amongst other things, I sometimes listen to Woman's Hour. It's amazing that it's so obsessed with racial issues, with diversity, with gender, in a very weird way. It seems to be always having radical leftist activists on that show. And it's not having right-wing activists on the show, or I hear very, very few of them. There definitely seems to be a bias towards this Islington Guardianista deal. And it doesn't represent mainstream Britain. Now, I don't mind hearing the odd left-wing person in the media, but I think if you're going to have left-wing people in the media, you should have right-wing people in the media too. but you see very, very few of them.
I think a lot of people would agree with that. And there you're talking about mainstream media. It, primarily, though, you're talking about the broadcasters. Do you think it's as bad nowadays on Sky News as well as the BBC? And then we'll move on from there in a minute to talk about new media. So this bias that you're talking about, is it on Sky as well?
I think you see the bias across the media. But the PC, the cult of political correctness, is most evident on the BBC. And it seems to have got completely out of hand. It's got out of hand on independent television as well. You see it in advertising. You see this extraordinary thing with the advertising now, where if you see an ad, if it's an ad that's produced in the UK, you can absolutely guarantee there's going to be someone of color with usually a white woman and a black man. But, you know, do we mind? Do we care if they're mixed race relationships or kids? Of course we don't. But why are the advertisers deliberately and persistently misrepresenting our reality and suggesting that there's so many mixed race marriages in the UK when they're quite a significant number, but not nearly the number that they're presenting to us? And the other interesting thing is, because there is this very obvious trend in the advertising to make it, quote unquote, more diverse, it actually tells you that there is a hidden hand directing this. There is someone controlling this and probably controlling lots of other stuff too. And that's what should be worrying us. Not necessarily the bias that seems displayed in the advertising, which some people might say was a sort of racism. What's really worrying is what's there proves to us that there's somebody directing this. We're not being consulted about that. They're just doing it.
So who's doing this? I mean, that's a pretty wild accusation to make. And some people also would argue, well, what's the problem with having mixed race couples? I know BAFTA have just announced a couple of days ago that no production will be allowed or be considered for prizes unless they're hitting the diversity quotas. You think that's wrong?
Yes, I do. Because let's take the example of historical drama. I think you can't alter reality. And it's getting to the stage now where we're altering reality. No one cares if people are mixed race anymore. I've got two of my own kids, you know, are partly Pathan. So I, for one particularly, don't care and think, you know, there was silly prejudice in the past. But what I do not like to see is this deliberate manipulation, which becomes more and more evident. And this issue of, you know, the white woman with the black man on TV ads, it's just so many people have come, certainly to my Twitter pages, to comment on it. And if you do comment on it and make reasonable comment on it, you run the risk of being called a racist. Well, I'm no racist. I detest racism. It's a hateful and horrible thing, and it causes great pain. Moreover, in the past, black people in the UK and in the US and elsewhere have suffered terribly. But I don't believe that's any longer really the case. But I certainly do not think that we should be manipulating drama and advertising in this way to make the quotas or whatever the system is. That is a manipulation of reality. It's something that would happen in an Orwellian society, not in a free one.
So it's a kind of social engineering. You said you felt there was somebody or something behind it. Expand on that.
Yeah, it's a very good question, isn't it? They, in inverted commas, the great non-generic enemy. Who are they? Well, is it us? Is this a projection of ourselves? Is it the people who happen to have risen to the top of the BBC who may have hidden their own political views? I mean, there is obvious bias in the BBC. It has a liberal left bias. But you also notice, if you watch it objectively, as I do, that it isn't always, for example, particularly friendly to Jeremy Corbyn. Now, I'm no fan of Corbyn. I think the current Labour leadership are indeed very, very disturbing. And if they ever came to power, would do terrible damage to us as a country. But yet I do see a bias against Corbyn sometimes at the BBC. What the BBC is packed with is Blairite placemen and women. The BBC, in its essence, is Blairite. So some people have joked that that means they're Euro-communists. I don't know. They're certainly not conservatives. They certainly do not tend to the right. And if you look at the way they treat historical drama, even factual documentaries now, you often see that they default to a semi or actual Marxist line. And I find that very worrying.
So it's this sort of cultural Marxism, this common purpose agenda, which I think you'd agree with me, no one's actually voted for, but that's sort of dominating drama. That's dominating the news, would you say? And that's the agenda. And does that make this whole idea of them and us rather than left and right? What do you think?
Yes, I think there's a canteen culture at the BBC, which is definitely politically correct. If you repeat the mantras of PC, you will progress through the BBC system. If you don't repeat those mantras, you will probably ultimately be pushed out of the system. You certainly will not progress. So I think that that is a big part of it. But if you start to explore what political correctness really is, it is an impediment upon freedom. It is about control. It is about having a class of PC priests and priestesses who dictate what you and I may think. And it's also telling us as ordinary punters that we're not safe to think by ourselves, that we need to have guidance. Because if we don't have this right and proper guidance from Big Sister, we will actually be thinking the wrong thoughts and dreadful things will happen. It is about the destruction of individualism. It is about the creation of a bigger and more powerful collective.
Okay, so that brings us on, in a way, in my mind, to Twitter in particular, but Facebook as well. Do you think Twitter has been used as a weapon to sort of push this agenda? Because the Twitterati, as I like to call them, when they suddenly decide somebody is going against the rules, I mean, could be Danny Baker with his joke about the royal family, which they decided was racist, ended up with this man getting the sack. Now, I don't think the joke was very funny. I know Danny, I worked with him for 5 years. He's certainly not a racist, but his career has been ruined. So does Twitter act as a force of evil?
Well, let's just say there are lots of people in very, very ordinary jobs as well, not necessarily in broadcasting, who might be working in a shop or whatever it might be,
yeah,
or in a normal office workplace. If they make the wrong comment, if they say something that is slightly off key according to the powers of PC, they can lose their job. They can certainly get into terrible trouble. Now, as far as, you know, people in the media are concerned, the whole thing is completely out of control now. It is very worrying. This is a sort of fascism in its own right. You have to be very careful what you say now. Before you or I tweet on Twitter or make a post on Facebook, we have to think about it, because there are things that we might say almost accidentally which could get us into hot water. Everybody now has to be very careful in what they see or, excuse me, say or write publicly, because you can get into severe problems. You might even break the law. I don't think you or I would break the law, but you could certainly get into a situation where you could lose a job. And that is wrong. That is not free speech. It is nothing like the situation which pertains in the US, where they have a First Amendment. We don't have the equivalent of a First Amendment. And all around us now, free speech is being closed down.
And there is this terrible thing, isn't it, that in a sense, Twitter acts as the new Lord Chamberlain. They can decide what should be banned and shouldn't be banned, what you can discuss and what you can't discuss. And the thing is, that discussion doesn't disappear. It goes behind closed curtains and closed doors. And I think that leads to more racism, stroke sexism or hatred. What do you think?
No, well, I think it does. And certainly my Twitter account, which is quite well followed, has suffered from what appears to be blatant censorship. I had one Brexit poll that I put up, and as I watched, Twitter removed 10,000 plus votes from that poll. I was amazed, and luckily I took screenshots as they were doing it. But 10,000 votes just disappeared as I was looking at the screen.
Did they explain? Did you complain?
No explanation. And then again and again, I now face a situation where I'll put something up, and there will be a false deletion notice. And it's often that it's something that relates to Boris or Brexit or something that is anti-PC. I have had dozens of these blue false deletion notices which say this tweet has been deleted. And you can get round it. You can get somebody else to retweet the original and it seems to come back online. But the fact of the matter is something very odd is going on. Similarly, I've had hundreds of followers just disappear. Now, if you ask a computing expert, they will say that's because Twitter probably thought that they were bot accounts or something like that. Well, I know in some cases that they were not bot accounts. So they're obviously making errors. And meantime, you and I don't really know what's happening on Twitter or indeed on Facebook, but particularly on Twitter, because everything you see is streamed towards your interests. And, you know, they create an echo chamber. Your account isn't just a public thing. It's what they think you want to hear about. And so that allows them the chance to manipulate what appears in everybody's inbox. And this is a very, very strange and weird deal. I mean, I've lost my Facebook account twice, and twice using back channel methods, I've been able to recover my Facebook account to the extent that if you go to my Facebook account, Michael Yardley, you will see that at the very top of it, I've now put up what Facebook sent me. A member of our team accidentally removed something you posted on Facebook. This was a mistake, and we sincerely apologize for this error. We've since restored the content, and you should now be able to see it. Blah, blah, blah. Well, I will not tell you how much effort that took, because for some days I was out in the cold. I couldn't connect to years and years of research and information that suddenly had just been frozen by Facebook.
Okay, let's talk more about that in a moment. We're going to take a short break. We're talking to the military historian Mike Yardley. It's Shooting from the Lip, it's Sputnik International, and I'm John Gaunt. I want to go further into this and question whether, you know, can we leave new media? Can we leave social media if it's so bad? And how has it been allowed to get to be this powerful? That's all coming up in the second half of Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt, and my special guest today, Mike Yardley. Don't dare go away.
Shooting from the Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here.
Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, Shooting from the Lip.
Okay, you're back with Shooting from the Lip with John Gaunt and my guest today, Mike Yardley. Let me just pose that question to you, Mike. I mean, when Twitter started, when Facebook started, we all wanted to be on it. You just spoke about losing your Facebook account and it obviously really upset you. I mean, can we live without these social media platforms? And because they're so powerful now, I mean, you're saying, you know, you can write something and it could be years ago and it could affect your employment chances now. Is it right that we've given them all this power, and is it correct they've got the power, and then do we need it?
Well, it's a very interesting subject. Let's say this as well, that the thing about social media that we must all be aware of is this is one of the greatest intelligence tools there has ever been. Whoever they are, they know a lot more about us than they ever did before. So we are giving away our information, and nothing in life is for nothing. Facebook and Twitter aren't free. We pay the price with our data. So for each of us, somewhere in the Arizona desert or wherever it may be, we have a digital self. And there is probably more information wherever our digital self is located than we actually know about ourselves. They probably know more about us than we do. That's a pretty terrifying thought. And meantime, if you look at the way this is progressing, no one ever thought these things were going to become as big as they have become. But the sort of stuff they can do now, and this is really scary, is they can manipulate your inbox. So the sort of news feeds and this sort of thing. So you see a certain type of story. And what they can do, they've got so good at this, is they can alter what's coming in at you to change your mood or to change your political point of view. And I know certainly Facebook have experimented with this. They've taken 100,000 people here and 100,000 people there. And they've tried to alter their whatever their opinion was on the basis of the information they were giving to them. This is an enormously powerful tool. Social media is enormously powerful. It's not a trivial thing. It can change the way you think. And people who think that they're not affected by social media or they're not affected by TV advertising are very naive and very foolish. We're all affected. It's only a question of to what extent are we affected?
But can it be controlled? Is it too late to put the genie back in a bottle? And you surely wouldn't want censorship by governments of this, would you, Mike?
I think the first thing to say to the people out there, John, is that you must realise that you are being manipulated and there is some effect upon you. Just saying that you won't be affected isn't enough. Once you realise that you are affected, once you've vaccinated in that way, then you can start to think about how you can clean all this stuff out of your head that might have been put there by persons unknown. And that is going on all the time. It's a very powerful tool and it distorts the democratic process. So, for example, you might be sitting in Russia or you might be sitting in China or you might be sitting in an Arab country and you might be able to afford the resources to manipulate social media in some way in the US or the UK to actually alter people's opinions. And it appears that this has been happening on a grand scale, that indeed there is far more manipulation of social media and of us than we realize. In the years to come, I think, I hope, we're in time to see that before it actually destroys our democratic process. Because at the moment, potentially, it could make a nonsense of the democratic process, because by pushing the way a few percentage of people vote, you could actually alter the result of a national election. That is a very scary thing.
But how do you control it? Can you control it? Would you trust a government to control it? To put Mark Zuckerberg, for example, back in his box? It's a very difficult thing to do, and it's a global thing. And also, people don't want to give up their mobile phones, do they?
I don't think you can easily control it. But, you know, not so long ago, I was in Macau, you know, off the Hong Kong coast, where all the gambling is, the sort of Las Vegas of the Chinese world. And I was amazed because everybody there had a mobile phone. I know everybody's got a mobile phone here, but there literally everybody had. And I'd be in some casino or something, and there would be 100 people all staring at their mobile phones or trying to do a selfie. And every single person had that same blue glow and dazed look on their face. And I thought, you know what, this is scary stuff. This is the future. Everybody connecting to the hive mind with their mobile phone. Can we push it back? Well, what you can do is turn it off. If as an individual you don't want to be part of this, you can become a Luddite. You can switch the mobile phone off. You can switch the other stuff off. How many people are actually going to do that, though? Very, very few. And meantime, the power of the people that own the platforms is colossal. You've then also got to ask yourself, who are behind the people who own the platforms? Is it just the people we see? You know, is it just the Zuckerbergs and the Bill Gateses, or are there other forces behind them? And there certainly could be other forces behind them. So this is fascinating stuff. How do you and I as individuals survive this? We become as aware as possible. I'm the first to admit that I probably am pretty addicted to social media because I spend hours a day on it. I invest a lot of time and energy into it. I get quite a lot of feedback from the stuff I post on it, but I have to accept that I am probably addicted to it. And that is a bad thing. And probably it would be a good thing occasionally just to go cold turkey, just to prove to myself that I can manage without it.
What's also interesting, of course, is that when we spoke in the first half about the broadcast media having a very soft left bias, or certainly a bias mostly against the right, and you mentioned Corbyn, but when it comes to social media, it is very left-wing, isn't it? And very much let's tick the boxes, you know, of globalisation, let's tick the boxes of Extinction Rebellion, etc., etc. That's worrying as well, isn't it? Because they're controlling the discussion in that respect.
Oh, I think it's very, very, very disturbing. I mean, I think it was yesterday I put up this, Leave EU is right. We didn't win two world wars to be bossed around by the Chancellor of Germany, or indeed the president of France, a country we liberated. The last thing this man, my uncle, said to me was this would happen when Germany was reunited. And there is a picture of my uncle Keith, who was the lead tank commander in the lead tank in Operation Market Garden and effectively started that famous battle with the command driver advance, which if you've ever seen the old movie A Bridge Too Far, you will see my poor old uncle giving that command and then watching the Irish Guards armor being ambushed, and nearly everyone he knew was killed in a few minutes thereafter. Now, I put that up, and that was put up on Twitter. And very shortly afterwards came up this little blue message. Sorry, that tweet has been deleted. And that is the same message that I've had again and again and again when I put up things that are pro-Brexit, pro-Boris, pro-Trump, whatever it might be. That little blue message appears. Sorry, that tweet has been deleted.
And you feel that's your free speech being violated. You have an absolute right to be slightly insulting to the Germans. It's not as insulting as the Leave EU poster, which again, they took down. But you don't think someone should have the right to delete your comment?
Of course not, John. Because I'm not saying that's necessarily my opinion, but I am saying that a veteran of World War II and one who was, you know, a hero of World War II, said to me before he died, he didn't think that the Germans should be reunited because he thought that they would rise again and become an over-dominant power within Europe. I think that's a perfectly valid thing to pass on to the people that follow me on Twitter and indeed to discuss here. Was he right? I don't know. But, you know, we certainly shouldn't be prevented from saying such things. And I'm hearing today that the European Court of Justice is passing legislation which may make it impossible to criticise the EU leadership in the future. Well, if that is true, and I don't know if you have any more information on that, that's very worrying.
Of course it is. It's very worrying indeed. But, you know, so where does this end? Where does this finish up? Because as you know, your description of the Chinese people that you saw all on their phones, well, that's everywhere, isn't it? I go out for a drink with my mates, I look around the pub, and couples are having romantic evenings, not with each other, but with their mobile phone. How do we break it? Can it be broken? What can we do moving forward?
It's become even more noticeable recently. Every kid you see has got the blue glow. I call it the electric gnosis. They are connected to this hive creature. And as I said, if you go to the Far East, it is even more obvious. In Japan, you know, in Hong Kong, places like that, you'd have to go there to see what I'm getting at, but it is unbelievable. Everybody is just there all the time on the phone. That is the center of their life. Now, this is obviously unhealthy because it's not very human. It is damaging our ability to interact in a traditional human manner. It is also, and this is another aspect which is intriguing, it is facilitating the growth and possible eventual takeover of the machines. Now, I have some very bright kids. And one of my kids plays chess for his country. And I have another very bright kid who's a computer whiz. And my boys both think that the computers will take over, that we will be downloading ourselves into our computers in the not so distant future. Put a timescale on that, 50 to 100 years. So what we're seeing now is perhaps the first stage of actually downloading ourselves into our computers. Now, I know that sounds a bit wacky. It sounds a bit David Icke-ish, but no, I think this is actually what is happening now.
Okay, just before we finish, let's bring it back to the modern day. Let's bring it back to politics. So when we get upset and we're Remainers or we're Leavers, and you know, let's talk about that, about Brexit at the moment. It's kind of, in a way, a diversion, isn't it? Because you're saying there's something much, much bigger going on whilst we squabble over Brexit.
I think it's definitely a diversion. And you've made an excellent point, John, because isn't the thing that's really happening now, if you look at Remainers and Leavers, and very crudely, they're separated on age grounds. So older people tend to be Leavers and younger people tend to be Remainers. But you know what? I think all of us have the same beef, the same concern, and that is that our voice doesn't count for much in the political system that we've got. We all feel, whether we're a Remainer or a Leaver, that we have an inadequate voice. And I think it's very interesting to think of these things, these, you know, mutual stuff that we've got in common, rather than what separates us. And once you start thinking about what we've got in common, it does start to illuminate the whole situation that we're facing now. There is something going very, very wrong with our political process. Lots of people on all sides of the political spectrum are waking up to the fact that the political process itself does not really represent us very well, that their voice has been muted, or at least they feel that they do not have an adequate say in the way their own country and destiny is going to go. And I think that is very important at the moment. And I think there's a time for us to talk to each other, Remainers and Leavers, and say, you know what? You know, I know we on this issue, we have a different opinion, but aren't we all saying that we're just not heard?
That is a brilliant way to end the interview. Thank you very much indeed. Mike Yardley, our military historian. I think he's right. We talk a lot about political correctness nowadays. We can't say this, we can't say that. We're all connected. We're meant to be worried about depression. We're meant to be worried about suicide. We're meant to be caring for each other. But we're so violently aggressive when we get on Twitter. I include myself. It's a weird, weird world, my masters. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to John Gaunt with my special guest, Mike Yardley. It's Shooting from the Lip, and it's Sputnik International. We'll be back next week with another person who's not scared to say what he or she thinks. Thanks for listening.
Shooting from the Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.